Pamphlet from the soundtrack of Local Hero and Going Home, and Ace with How Long, which was prompted by Alan Roberts, who woke up this morning with that as his earworm. Not a bad choice, Al. Quarter past eight, the Full English Breakfast Show. The UK government is launching a multi-million pound communications campaign to reach the estimated 1 million British citizens living in the EU to ensure they know what steps to take if they wish to remain in their host countries after Brexit. The Guardian newspaper reports today it's urging all EU member states to accelerate the process to enable British nationals to secure their rights amid concern among campaigners that some countries have not yet even opened schemes for UK citizens. A government spokesman said UK nationals living in the EU must be able to rely on the rights of the withdrawal agreement, just as EU nationals living in the UK can. We continue to call on the EU and member states to protect the rights of UK nationals with faster implementation, longer application windows and clear communications, as the UK has done for EU citizens in the UK. The call comes weeks after the Cabinet Office Minister Michael Gove wrote to the Vice President of the European Commission saying that while the UK had given EU citizens 27 months to apply for settled status, some EU member states were planning short application windows that may not allow sufficient time for citizens to secure their rights. The EU has confirmed that 13 countries, including France, where many British people live, have opted for a constitutive system similar to that in the UK, requiring British nationals to apply for settled status. The remaining 14 member states have chosen the simpler declaratory system that allows British nationals to register their residency to demonstrate their rights to continue to live, work or study in their chosen country. Now, Spain's been pretty good. An estimated 400,000 Britons live there and has opted for the latter, giving campaigners hope that few were left behind. It's also launched what local British campaigners are describing as a warm campaign, with the Minister for Inclusion telling Britons who want to remain that this is and always will remain your home. It coincided with a joint statement with the British ambassador to remind Britons their rights are guaranteed if they're living in the EU before the 31st of December. The country's national statistics show that 360,000 British nationals have already registered to be in Spain, with 104,000 living in the Andalusia province, including 62,000 in the costas around Malaga. Sue Wilson, the founder of Remain in Europe, campaign group for Britons in Spain, said the fact the Spanish government have chosen a simple system to allow rights to be guaranteed without an application for settled state is a great relief to British immigrants. Of course, here in France, you will have to register. When that website opens, it was supposed to open on the 1st of July, but it's now been put back until October. If you have an existing carte de séjour, you should just be able to swap it over for a new one, but people starting from scratch will have to fill in all the paperwork. But the good news is it's all going to be done online, which will save a trip to the prefecture, although you will have to go down there to actually pick the card up. Time for this morning's comedy. Here is a bit of Dad's Army for a Monday morning. Well, it should be, but can't find it now. Oh, yes, here it is. Dad's Army.
Right. Now then. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right. 8 cod and chips.
I want place.
Right. It's 1 place and chips. 7 cod and chips. Right. Who wants vinegar?
Also aufpassen. Wie viele von euch wollen Essig?
1, 2, 3, 4, the vinegar. Who wants salt?
So bitte mal aufpassen, wie viele von euch wollen Salz?
1, 2, 3, the salt. Who don't want salt or vinegar?
Also zum dritten Mal, wie viele ohne Salz oder Essig?
That's 2 without salt or vinegar. Here, come on, here, just see if I've got this right. Now, you want place and chips. They're going to have cotton chips, and it's 4 with vinegar, 3 with salt, and 2 without salt or vinegar.
What are you doing?
I'm taking the order.
And I don't want any nasty, soggy chips. I want mine crisp. Und light brown.
Crisp und
never light mind that rubbish. What you giving? If I say you'll eat soggy chips, you'll eat soggy chips.
Soggy chips.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you're not taking this very seriously, are you?
I'm taking it incredibly seriously.
No. I mean, you were out clubbing with Chris Grayling a couple of weeks ago, and then you're jetting off to Switzerland, you know, into your private little bolt hole. So, you know, you're not taking the whole coronavirus situation seriously at all, are you, really?
No, I am indeed taking it very seriously, and I continue to abide by all rules and regulations set out by various governments and jurisdictions in which I operate in. But it feels like the world is slowly but surely returning back to normal, but we can't, of course, take it for granted. You only have to look at the numbers out of the United States, out of Brazil, out of India. I think we saw record numbers in the past 24 hours or so of infection cases. So I think we still need to be cognizant about the potential risks of the virus and the impact it can have on individuals and, of course, the economy.
I just closed my email down because it was pinging, so...
Well, first time for everything, isn't it? I mean, you're rarely bombarded by emails, are you?
Mm. Somebody was wondering about that Netflix programme you were talking about last week. I can't remember what it was called. What was it?
Wiener? Yes.
Right, OK. So the gentleman...
Anthony Wiener.
Right.
Yes, it's called Wiener. It's a wonderful political documentary.
There you are. I can't remember who it was who asked about that, but Wiener is what you're looking for. Right, let's have a look at the markets. A pretty good week last week, but earnings season is upon us now, and pretty grim predictions about companies losing lots and lots of money.
Yeah, I think that's right. Listen, it was an unsettled week in global financial markets last week, although ultimately a positive one for equity markets. Investors digested a wide range of updates, including vaccine developments, key economic data releases, as well as the start of the second quarter earnings season. Against that backdrop, we say, of rising virus cases that threaten to suffocate reopening plans. In terms of equity market performance, European equities rose 1.6% last week, helped a little bit by expectations European leaders will approve a recovery fund. S&P 500 rose for a third straight week. It was up 1.2%. That's its longest winning streak that we've seen since December. In terms of the earnings season, still very early stages. Focus, of course, last week was on the US bank, where record trading revenue helped to offset higher provisions for bad loans, as demonstrated by the likes of JP Morgan. I think given the broad range of uncertainties, it's no surprise that companies are still reticent to provide guidance for the rest of the year. If you look at analyst forecasts, this according to Bloomberg data, Stock 600 in Europe earnings are projected to contract by 32% during the course of this year, but then rebound by 36% as you look out to 2021. The S&P 500 earnings are forecast to drop 22% this year, with a 26% recovery as you look out to next year. In terms of the markets this morning, waiting for confirmation on that European summit, of course, but currently calling the FTSE up 5 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 16 points. CAC 40 in Paris up 1 point.
Not a very good advert for the European Union, is it? This haggling over the emergency coronavirus budget.
No, it's supposed to be an awful lot smoother than this. Supposed to be done and dusted over the course of a couple of days. I think we're now moved into at least the fourth day of negotiations. It appears the Dutch have been pushing back amongst others. European leaders meeting in Brussels. Look like they are closing in, however, on a deal for this €750 billion stimulus package. The money apparently going to be spent on making the bloc carbon neutral by 2050, digitalizing the economy and investing in research and innovation, as well as, of course, providing support for economies. The new proposal is thought to keep the fund at the same size, but reduce the amount that's distributed as grants. The fund is seen as an important step for the future of the European bloc. Not only will it support battered economies, particularly the most vulnerable, the southern European economies, but it also shows a determination to move towards much greater levels of financial integration, embracing shared debt liability, for example. The Commission, to remind you, will borrow the money using government guarantees for the joint EU long-term budget as security. And it has been affecting markets already. The yield gap between German bonds and Italian debt has been narrowing. And of course, the euro has strengthened quite significantly. It's up around about 7% against the dollar compared to where we were back in the March lows.
So the Dutch holding things up really at this EU summit?
Yeah, it certainly appears so, particularly about the idea of grants and how much should be given away and how much should be structured in terms of loans. And that appears to be an important area that they've been focusing on. But the reality is, I think a deal will be done. It looks like, as I said, they're getting closer towards it. And it's certainly seen as positive for the European bloc.
Do you think the alarm bells are ringing at Facebook with droves of companies refusing to advertise? Disney, the latest one.
I think they'll be more concerned perhaps than when regulators were knocking on their doors. So I think advertisers likely to have probably greater sway in terms of changing policy. Disney, as you say, has become the latest company to slash its advertising on Facebook, adding to the list of companies that have reduced or pulled advertising spending from the social media giant over its handling of hate speech, controversial content, and misinformation. Other companies include the likes of Starbucks, Unilever, and Adidas. This is all part of the Stop Hate for Profit campaign. So we wait to see a formal, I think, acknowledgement from this from Facebook, but no doubt they are looking at their policies quite carefully.
This is your emails pinging now. You should turn it off, you know.
It is. I know you keep telling me. How do you turn
it? Just close the browser down. Click the Xbox and it will close it down.
I need to be in contact. Clients expect me to be available 24/7.
Well, you can't reply while you're talking to me, though, unless you're extremely multi-talented. So, I mean, they give you 10 minutes, surely.
No problem there at all.
OK, I'd just like to go back to the markets a minute, Heng, because, you know, reports over the weekend saying that small-cap firms are expected to post declines of around 90%, mid-caps 67% and large-caps 44%. So we're going to have a bumpy ride on the markets, aren't we, over the next few weeks?
Well, that's the second quarter numbers that they've been talking to. Markets, as we know, tend to look forward. So, and perhaps they're looking a little bit too far forward, and perhaps they're looking a little bit too optimistically at what we can expect for 2021. If you look at those figures that we were just talking about for expectations for next year, a strong rebound in profit is expected by analysts. But you have to question, is that realistic? We know, of course, that the COVID-19 is likely to still be around. The vaccine, probably at the earliest, according to US officials, isn't going to be in place until the end of the first half of next year. Is it really realistic the companies will be able to maintain margins and to generate the same level of profitability with all the protocols, with all the disruption that's required, with all the problems around trade, with all the problems around supply lines coming through, as they did in 2019 for us? I think we still remain a little bit cautious about that prospect. So I think the markets have discounted a bad set of numbers for the second quarter. It'll be interesting to see whether we see changes towards the guidance as you look out to next year. And that's likely to determine where markets are going to go from here. But against, of course, the backdrop of overwhelming fiscal and monetary support, which is helping to boost confidence.
So did Chris Grayling buy you a drink then when you were out clubbing with him?
I wasn't clubbing. I saw him down at the club. I have to say, I was nowhere near him. I'm sure
in the club.
More horrified to see me there than him being there.
It's probably just as well he didn't buy you a drink, because he probably would have just spilt it all over you anyway.
Listen, I prefer not to get him. You seem to want to drag me into the political arena each and every day.
It was a
mere mention that I saw him and he looked relatively cheerful despite his recent problem.
Well, it must have been before he didn't win the chairmanship of that committee. Yeah,
exactly right.
I'm afraid my writing's let me down again this morning. I was too preoccupied with you and Chris Grayling. And I think it starts with a W or is it a V? What else did you want to talk about?
No idea, but we can talk about the shape of the recovery, W or V. That's one of the big questions that, of course, investors have been asking themselves what we're likely to see. So far, the data has been pointing to, you could argue, a V-shaped recovery, but I think it's probably too early to suggest that's the case. I think lots of people have become very excited about the shape of the recovery. Is it going to be V? Is it going to be L? Is it going to be a U-shape? The Nike swoosh, of course, I think is particularly popular. For us, I think it's probably too early to say. Listen, the data rebound has been strong. There's a long way to go. We don't know the path of the pandemic. And if you listen to epidemiologists, they can't predict the path of the pandemic. So asking economists to predict the path for the economy, given they're inextricably linked together, I think it's probably a little bit harsh to do so.
Well, an opinion piece in the Sydney Morning Herald today said there can be no proper recovery until we've seen the back of the virus.
You're so well read, aren't you? It's lovely to see you just gently bring in notions of, you know, opinion pieces from around the world. It's very impressive. Listen, that's exactly right. The reality is the path of the pandemic will determine, I think, the longevity of the economic downturn and, of course, the intensity of it. Until we have a proper understanding of that, we can't make any true predictions.
There was some quite encouraging news about an interferon treatment this morning, though.
Yeah, we get a range of different companies coming forward and saying they're making progress. I think the positive thing to focus on is the world scientists, the world medical experts have been united in their approach to try and bring this to a swift conclusion. And everyone will continue to watch that very carefully indeed. I mean, if you talk about the first half of next year, you'd have to recognise that would be a record-breaking time frame for a process that normally takes about a decade for an effective and safe vaccine. The fastest ever vaccine development was mumps. Remember, that took 4 years, although it was licensed back in 1967. You could argue that technology has moved on quite substantially, of course, in the last few decades.
OK, foreign exchanges, the pound under pressure below 1.10 euro again this morning.
And it has as the euro continues to get stronger. Pound against the dollar, not too bad. They won 25. Euro dollar coming in at 114.5 in a sec. Certainly euro strength across the board, getting you a pound buying 1 euro 9.5 cents this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, speak to you tomorrow. Hank Paulson, Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
I'm Rob Harrison with the top stories across the Riviera. The wearing of face masks in closed public spaces becomes compulsory today as France attempts to stamp out rising numbers of coronavirus cases around the country. The reproduction rate R is now at 1.5 in the Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur, and the level is higher than that in some other regions, notably Brittany and the Mayenne. The French Health Minister, Olivier Véran, says that closed public spaces include banks, shops and supermarkets. Fines of 135 euros will be issued for non-compliance with the regulations. The mayor of Nice, Christian Estrosi, has announced that free mobile coronavirus testing vehicles will be circulating in the city from this week. With the R rate increasing in the region, Mr. Estrosi, who's already had the virus, wants as many people to be tested as possible. Mobile testing sites will be up and running on the Place Masséna, Place Garibaldi and near the train station by Wednesday or Thursday. Test results will be given within 24 to 48 hours. Testing of passengers arriving from at-risk areas is to start at Nice Côte d'Azur airports in the coming days. A large fire has swept through an apartment block on the Boulevard de la Madeleine in Nice. Smoke from the fire, which started in a flat on the second floor of the building, was visible from several kilometres away. The residents have been placed in temporary housing. Fortunately, there are no injuries reported. It took firefighters several hours to bring the blaze under control. An investigation into the cause of the fire is underway. A 73-year-old man has been found dead in his swimming pool on the Chemin du Croc in Trans-en-Provence. Authorities were called to the private house by neighbours where the man was dead at the bottom of the pool. An autopsy has been carried out on the body, but death by drowning is almost certainly the cause. And authorities are searching for the owner of a small boat which sank off the Ile Sainte-Marguerite over the weekend. The 8-metre motorboat was found sinking on Sunday morning and a containment kit was set up around it to prevent oil leaking into the sea. The owner was nowhere to be found. In national news today, a criminal investigation is underway into the cause of a fire at Nantes Cathedral, which blew out stained glass windows and destroyed the 16th century organ. Prosecutors say that three fires were started inside the building on Saturday morning, and they're treating it as a criminal act. The blaze at the St. Peter and St. Paul Cathedral was brought under control after several hours and came just over a year after fire destroyed the roof and main spire of Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Fortunately, the damage to Nantes Cathedral is not as bad as first feared. The cathedral has suffered fire damage on two previous occasions, and in 1972 its wooden roof was destroyed. A volunteer worker who closed the building on Friday night has been questioned by police, but has now been released without charge. And the French Prime Minister Jean Castex says that he's watching the coronavirus situation in Spain very closely and has not ruled out closing the border again. Mr. Castex was speaking after 400,000 people in Barcelona had fresh restrictions implemented as the Catalonia region fights a resurgence of COVID-19. The Prime Minister said the situation on the other side of the frontier was preoccupying and that he was speaking regularly to his Spanish counterpart. The R reproduction rate in southwest France has also been increasing in recent days to between 1.4 and 1.5.
Riviera Radio, sports news.
Cricket. England are in the hunt for victory on the final day of the second test against West Indies at Old Trafford. At stumps on day four, the home side were on 37 for two in their second innings, having dismissed West Indies for 287. Stuart Broad took 3 for 66 in a late burst to dismiss the West Indies tail, and England now lead by 219 heading into the final day. Formula One, Lewis Hamilton led from start to finish to claim victory in Sunday's Hungarian Grand Prix. The Mercedes star opened a big lead at the start of the race and never looked back. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull was second, despite a crash on the way to the grid, which damaged his front wing and suspension, with Valtteri Bottas in the second, Mercedes third. The win puts Hamilton top of the Drivers' Championship with three races gone. The next race is the British Grand Prix at Silverstone on July the 31st. Football, the FA Cup final will be between Arsenal and Chelsea. Arsenal beat Manchester City 2-0 on Saturday, while Chelsea beat Manchester United 3-1 on Sunday. The final at Wembley will be played on Saturday, the 1st of August. Here's more from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Alistair Ross at BBC Sport, and two glaring errors from Manchester United goalkeeper David De Gea has handed Chelsea a place against Arsenal in the final of the FA Cup. His mistakes put Chelsea into a comfortable 2-0 lead. It finished 3-1. The semi-final was De Gea's first FA Cup game of the season, replacing usual Cup goalkeeper Sergio Romero. Here's their manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Both Sergio and David has played really well in that run. We've kept loads of clean sheets. You can see David making a few saves here today as well. And I see where you're coming from. Everyone's going to make a big, massive headline on this, that, the other, and David. But of course, he knows he couldn't say that one.
In the Premier League's fight for European football, Tottenham cruised past Leicester 3-0, Harry Kane scoring twice. Leicester stay fourth on goal difference above Manchester United, who have a game in hand, and they meet in the final game of the season. Bournemouth, though, are on the verge of relegation. A 2-0 defeat by Southampton means they are 3 points from safety with one game to play. Here's Bournemouth manager Eddie Howe.
Football's a strange game. I really don't know what to say at this moment. I think it's out of our hands. We'll see how the week goes. It's a very strange feeling and a difficult situation to be in, because with football, I think you want to know if you do your job, then you're going to be okay. But we didn't do that today, and that's why it's now a really difficult situation.
Watford have sacked manager Nigel Pearson, the third time they've dismissed a manager this season. Club officials fear the consequences if they were to lose both of their last fixtures, which are against Manchester City and Arsenal. And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Seems a ridiculous situation, sacking Nigel Pearson like that with two games to go. Three games in the English Premier League tonight. Brighton play Newcastle, Sheffield United face Everton, and Wolves play Crystal Palace. In the English Championship on Sunday, Derby lost 3-1 at home to the champions Leeds United, while Barnsley beat Nottingham Forest 1-0 to keep their hopes of remaining in the division alive. Finally, golf. John Rahm of Spain has won the Memorial Tournament in Ohio. Rahm carded a 3-over par 75 in the final round, but it was enough to leave him on 9-under, 3 shots clear of Ryan Palmer and 4 clear of Matt Fitzpatrick of England. Rory McIlroy finished on 4-over, with Tiger Woods on 6-over par.
The Marine Weather Forecast, brought to you by Oyster Yachts. Be safe on the seas with Oyster Yachts.
For coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Admiralty in Laval, the general situation is weak high pressure, 1,015 millibars over the region. Winds are variable, force 1 to 3. The sea is calm, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,016 millibars. And the outlook for Tuesday, clear skies, force 2 to 4, variable winds, slight seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are variable, force 2 to 4. The sea is slight, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,015 millibars. And the outlook for Tuesday, clear skies, force 2 to 4, variable winds, slight seas and good visibility.
The Marine Weather Forecast, brought to you by Oyster Yachts. Crafted by British boat builders since 1973, the best ocean-going sailing yachts in the world. The world is your oyster. Make Oyster your world. OysterYachts.com.
Riviera Radio. Weather.
Mainly fine today, light variable winds, temperatures 28 to 30 degrees this afternoon, overnight lows 21 degrees on the coast, 18 degrees inland with clear skies. Tuesday and Wednesday, fine in coastal areas, thundery inland tomorrow. Thundery outbreaks across the Admiralty on Wednesday, highs of 26 to 31 degrees over the next couple of days. Finally, a rare LeBron James trading card has sold for $1.8 million at auction, nearly doubling the previous records. The card features LA Lakers star James during his 2003-2004 rookie season with the Cleveland Cavaliers. It was one of just 23 made and was in mint condition, according to the auctioneers. The 35-year-old 16-time NBA All-Star and 4-time Most Valuable Player is currently chasing his 4th NBA title. The rest of the NBA season is set to be played at Florida's Disney World Resort from the 30th of July. The season was suspended on the 11th of March because of coronavirus measures. The sale at Golden Auctions eclipsed the previous record for a modern-day card of $923,000, set in May for a card of Los Angeles Angels star Mike Trout. The James card, produced by Upper Deck, was signed and featured a small part of one of his Cavaliers jerseys.